everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studios, part of the Bustos Media Center here in Central Tucson. Five radio stations under one roof now. This is the Buckmaster Show as we get going now on the last work week of October. It's Monday, October the 27th, 2025. The Buckmaster Show Live Line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Folks are always, hope they will call in. If you have any questions or comments, 790-2040, area code 520. Let us know what's on your mind. On our Monday one-on-one, that's the way we begin our week here. It's presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing. For 40 years now, just about 40 years, Moe and his family have been specializing in picture framing. They do some great bathroom mirrors over at the gallery. They've got beautiful art for sale there. And if you don't want to put the piece up on the wall and would rather have Moe come out with his ladders and with his equipment to make sure it's perfectly where you want it to be, he does make house calls. Moe's Gallery, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and on the web at moesgallery.com. Our one-on-one guest, Dr. Michael Schaller, returns to the program. We're glad to have him back. Regents Professor of History Emeritus at the University of Arizona, where he taught from 1974 to 2020. He mostly has written about U.S.-Asia relations and the rise of political conservatism since Richard Nixon. His most recent book is co-authored two volumes on history of the United States in a global context. It's titled American Horizons. His interest in American drug policy began in graduate school, and his master's thesis and first published article was a study of the federal prohibition of marijuana in 1937. He's interested in how drug policy reflects broader political issues. For example, how President Trump's recent military attacks on alleged drug smuggling in the Caribbean and Latin America mimics the post 9/11 war on terror. Professor, good to see you again.
Thanks, Bill. Good to see you too.
I think the basic question is, why would a country pursue a policy that continues to fail? And you know the old definition of insanity. Let's do it over and over again. And with drug policy, it's the same old tune.
It certainly is. Let me say, Bill, that I don't, even though I sometimes come off as sarcastic in my criticism of the government's policy, I don't mean to belittle the problem of drugs. I mean, there's probably not a family in America that hasn't been impacted to one degree or another.
Sure.
My criticism is not to belittle the problem, but to ask, just as you said, why for over a hundred years have we been pursuing a series of policies that fail over and over again? Mm-hmm. These so-called wars on drugs. We sometimes think of them as new. Maybe it was Nixon, maybe it was Reagan, maybe it's Trump. But the wars on drugs began in the early 20th century with the passage of laws that criminalized narcotics. And you could argue that wars for drugs began even before that. Mm-hmm. In the 19th century, Great Britain went to war
over opium.
To force China to buy British opium.
Right.
And although the Americans were not formally involved in those wars, American merchants took full advantage of it in selling Turkish opium to the Chinese. And many of the great American fortunes of the 19th century began with that. Franklin Roosevelt's grandfather was an opium salesman.
Really?
Yeah. And that the opium trade financed much of America's infrastructure in the 19th century, canals and railroads.
The Gilded Age may have a connection to opium.
Absolutely. And in America's case, the drug problem, so to speak, really began during and after the Civil War with the widespread use of morphine as a painkiller.
Right.
And then its use in patent medicines like laudanum, over-the-counter medicines. Mm-hmm. But the real problem, as we think of it, began in the 1890s because of two simultaneous inventions.
What were they?
Heroin and the hypodermic needle.
Huh.
Heroin was a super refined, chemically refined form of opium and morphine, far more powerful. Although it was sold by Bayer, it was sold over the counter in drugstores as a non-addictive alternative to morphine. You can see wonderful ads from the early 20th century. Get your Bayer aspirin along with your heroin. But that, and the hypodermic needle, of course, meant injections of a much more powerful of substance. In reaction to this, in 1914, Congress passed the Harrison Act, which made it illegal to import or possess heroin, related opiates, and cocaine. Although one company in America was given a special dispensation, Coca-Cola.
We know that one, Coca-Cola.
was allowed to import trace amounts of cocaine used as a flavoring. But the importance of that, of the law, was that it defined drug use and addiction as a crime. You know, not as a social problem, but as a crime and a moral failure. And in a sense, here we are over 110 years later, and we still have the same basic approach with a few exceptions. One other thing I'll say, and then I'll let you ask me things, is the problem has always been defined as caused by others. It was Chinese in the late 19th, early 20th century. It was Mexicans in the 1930s when marijuana became an issue. It was communists, Russian and Chinese, in the 50s when Congress passed new laws. And then later, in more recent decades, it's been Mexican drug cartels. The problem was always caused by somebody else, not the market at home, but the purveyors abroad.
Has any president since Woodrow Wilson kind of backed off on this war on drugs and looked more at the American use of drugs and the and what maybe we need to look within rather than look without?
Only mildly.
And what president might that have been?
Jimmy Carter toyed with the idea of lowering, at least for marijuana, drug penalties, but he never quite got around to it. There was always a political reason not to be called soft on drugs.
Sure.
No president. And it's not, ironically, not been a partisan issue. Republicans and Democrats fall over each other in most cases to see who could be tougher. You had Joe Biden and Republicans in the 80s and 90s. You know, calling for harsher drug penalties. You had George W. Bush and Barack Obama, you know, both of whom admitted to using drugs in their youth, refused to budge on, on this. So really, no president has ever wanted to take the political heat for reassessing the fundamental basis of the so-called war on drugs.
More, this is a very interesting statistic that you shared with me. By a vast margin, far more Americans have died from legal drugs, specifically tobacco and alcohol, which we regulate and accept.
Right. You know, when we use the term drugs, we usually mean something illegal, you know, in common parlance.
Sure.
But if you use a medical definition, of course, both alcohol and tobacco are psychoactive drugs, you know, physiologically and psychologically active by any measure. You don't have, you know, tobacco and alcohol have killed far more people. But we've chosen to regulate them, for better or worse. Tried prohibition in the 20s. Dropped it when it was seen as counterproductive. Tobacco, we still allow. We limit who can buy it and so forth. So countries sort of made its peace with those drugs. In terms of narcotics drugs, opiates and related drugs, no. But the other statistic, when you say far more people died from tobacco and alcohol, is to think of how many people have died in our lifetimes in the past 30 or 35 years from overdoses. More Americans since the Reagan presidency have died than died in all America's wars cumulatively. And the problem has not gotten better. It's gotten much worse.
Right.
In the Reagan years, when Reagan said Just Say No to Drugs and Campaign for Drug-Free America, fewer than 10,000 people a year died from drug-related overdoses. Mm-hmm. In 2023, 120,000 died. So the wars on drugs not only didn't win, but you could say drugs won.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, we look to foreign adversaries or whatever, foreign countries, as the boogeyman. Why don't we look within and figure out what we're going to do about this? That's far too complex, right?
Well, it's far harder.
Far harder, problems, more painful.
Problems of addiction are complex. You know, and people like to say, politicians want to say, the drug problem. Mm-hmm. And I'd say the answer, this is a typical, I guess, liberal academic answer, is there isn't a drug problem. There are drug problems. Mm-hmm. People use drugs or misuse drugs or become addicted for lots of reasons. Mm-hmm. And by the same token, one solution won't fit all. Mm-hmm. And yet you can't put it on a bumper sticker. You know, Just Say No to Drugs. It will fit on a bumper sticker, but it has no basis in reality.
And now we have fentanyl, which is a derivative eventually, or its family tree would go back to opioids, right, or opium.
It mimics the effects, but it's a chemical created.
Right.
And that creates a whole new set of problems because you can endlessly tinker with chemical formulas.
Sure.
You can outlaw fentanyl as we have, and a chemist comes up with one molecule difference, and it's not illegal.
Right.
And fentanyl is actually very useful in surgery and other medical procedures, but it can be very addictive and dangerous when used, you know, as a recreational drug.
Mm-hmm. You have to be extremely careful, I guess, if you've had surgery and they give it to you, right?
Yeah.
It could be very addictive. All right, our Monday one-on-one will continue after we take the break, but I do want to say that we're speaking with Dr. Michael Schaller, Regents Professor of History Emeritus at the University of Arizona. Always a fascinating conversation when Professor Schaller visits us. Our Monday one-on-one presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing right next to Copenhagen, Fort Lowell and Dodge. Also want to talk about Mona's Danish Bakery. What a great bakery. Over 20 years, Steve and his team have been delivering the finest in European-style pastries. Steve trained and grew up in Denmark, and he worked all over Europe, so he's brought that special European touch for his pastries to Tucson. They're the home of the Danish Kringle, which is a beautiful pastry, especially for the holidays. And Steve asked me to tell everybody, you know, Thanksgiving coming up, think about what kind of pies you want to order and the bread for your table. Mona's Danish Bakery is located northeast corner Swan and Sunrise and on the web at monasdanishbakery.com. We'll be right back talking about the drug war with Professor Michael Schaller.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane in North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
Check out the project list for a new $2.67 billion regional transportation plan that Pima County voters will consider next March. The RTA Next Plan proposes improvements in the greater Tucson region to reduce congestion and support cleaner air, enhance network reliability, safety, and efficiency. It will also expand transit, bike, and pedestrian options for another 20 years. Voters will be asked to okay a half-cent countywide sales tax to continue RTA improvements. The tax rate will not increase. Learn more about the proposed plan and projects at RTANext.com.
Travel is in my DNA. When I'm ready to start another adventure, my trip begins and ends at our local airport, Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. TUS, where it's made easy to fly. Start planning now for your next air adventure by visiting flytucson.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. we grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, covering your hometown.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show and the Green Thing, Zocalo Village Studio. Our Monday one-on-one is presented by Moe's Gallery and Framing, located at Fort Lowell and Dodge, and on the web at moesgallery.com. Fascinating conversation about the war on drugs, which goes back a long, at least over 100 and 120 years. Michael Schaller is here. Dr. Schaller, Regents Professor of History Emeritus at the University of Arizona. Dr. Schaller, what about marijuana? It seems like we've loosened the purse strings, maybe purse strings isn't the right word. The prosecution, certainly, over marijuana, which, when you look at the arrests that have been made for drugs, marijuana's at the top of the list, isn't it?
Absolutely. You know, marijuana, almost nobody had heard of it before the 1930s.
Mm-hmm.
In 1937, pressured by the Bureau of Narcotics, which was part of the Treasury Department, the Bureau, it's a funny story. I'll try to tell it quickly. Mm-hmm. During Prohibition, there were lots of agents that went after bootlegging.
Mm-hmm.
When Prohibition was repealed in 1933, there were a lot of underemployed Treasury Department agents, the Elliot Nesses of the world.
Right.
Many of them moved over to the Bureau of Narcotics, mm-hmm. which was also part of the Treasury Department, mm-hmm. headed by a Harry Anslinger, a former railroad detective.
Mm-hmm.
Anslinger realized that there wasn't much of an opiate problem in the U.S. Mm-hmm. in the 30s, mm-hmm. and he ginned up a campaign against marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
People of our generation, Bill, perhaps remember the movie Reefer Madness, made in the 30s.
Sure.
The Bureau of Narcotics and Ransom actually wrote stories to give to newspapers, made up stories about an epidemic of
marijuana use.
Yes. Which was very focused on race mixing and mixing of interracial sex. Anslinger was a virulent racist himself.
But very few people at that time were even using marijuana.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Congress, in its wisdom, passed the Marijuana Tax Act of 1937. And from 1937 to 2015, when state laws began to change, far more Americans were arrested for marijuana use than for any other drug.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Marijuana, a drug that killed precisely nobody.
Right.
But it became the focal point. It was part of this notion of drug use was immoral.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was both immoral and criminal.
Mm-hmm.
Marijuana laws began changing in around 2015
mm-hmm.
Because both liberals and conservatives were appalled by how much they were costing.
Mm-hmm.
$47,000 a year per prisoner.
Mm-hmm.
Both conservatives and liberals decided mm-hmm. that was terrible policy.
Mm-hmm.
And states began changing.
Mm-hmm.
Now almost three dozen states allow recreational use of marijuana, even more allow mm-hmm. medical use.
Mm-hmm.
But that was after literally hundreds of thousands of people had a criminal record.
Mm-hmm.
And that
criminal record has cost people jobs. I know that locally there's been efforts to expunge marijuana arrests from back in the 60s, 70s, 80s, because people were unable to find a job because it's on their record.
Right.
Yeah.
In the Biden Well, actually, starting with Obama and then Biden, and even in the first Trump administration, there were efforts to go back and expunge some of these records from minor drug offenses. Yeah. Trump supported something called the First Steps Act in his first term, which was to free people who had been imprisoned under archaic drug laws. He's, of course, walked that back completely in his second term, and you know now is trying to police the Caribbean with you know tactics devised in the war on terror. But it's one more example of this terrible cycle of when you're faced with a problem or want to divert attention from other problems, declare a war on drugs.
Well, I mentioned in the introduction about how this alleged drug smuggling in Latin America mimics the post-9/11 war on terror. How so?
Well, in a couple of ways. The legal basis for it was that simply a presidential finding was enough to justify the use of deadly military force. You could make an argument, as did that after 9/11, in the war on global war on terror, that had a certain legitimacy. But that logic has now been extended to by calling drug cartels, such as they are, which are far less organized and unified than people think. But the drug cartels are foreign terrorist organizations, the way Al-Qaeda was. Okay? And therefore, the use of deadly military force rather than judicial force. The Coast Guard used to intercept drug shipments all the time, bring people to trial. Mostly they were convicted. But this is to blow them out of the water. Of course, one of the many ironies is what they're blowing out of the water is cocaine shipments, most of which go to Europe. Not fentanyl, most of which comes across the Mexican border in commercial shipments.
There is a new pathway that they're using. I heard on NPR they're using semi-submergibles and maybe transitioning to full submarines for the cocaine traffic, moving it from South America to wherever. As you say, a lot of it's been going that the shipments that we've been bombing are really headed for Rotterdam and different ports in Europe,
One of the many fascinating things about drug wars and the drug trade, it's the most global of commodities.
It isn't? Yes, it is.
And
it
it's been that way since the 19th century. You know, when the British imported opium from India to, you know, China, and the Americans from Turkey to China and so forth. Yeah, so there are always these technological innovations on both sides.
And the use of this politically is a very convenient distraction for presidents.
Yes. In the Nixon administration, in the first Nixon administration, Nixon, on the one hand, was de-escalating the war in Vietnam, but escalating the war on drugs. And he saw a connection. He said, you know, we can deal with radicals, blame heroin use on black power and the Black Panthers, blame marijuana on SDS and leftist anti-war groups. When Reagan began de-escalating the Cold War in 1986, he ramped up the war on drugs, you know, as an alternative. Both the first President Bush and Bill Clinton emphasized military interventions along the Mexican border and in Latin America. Trump, too, is doing that. It's a convenient scapegoat, which isn't to say there aren't drug problems. It's just that these aren't the problems or the answers.
Do you have any feeling on how homegrown the fentanyl problem would be, the manufacture? I mean, we hear it's coming from China or Mexico, or President Trump has even accused our friends to the north, Canada, of being a supplier of fentanyl. How much of it do you think might be just homegrown here in this country?
You know, all of these are estimates, but the bulk of fentanyl, which is a chemically produced, it's not a naturally produced, unlike opiates. It mimics them chemically, but it's manufactured. Precursor chemicals mostly come from China. They go to Mexico, or in drug labs they're manufactured. It doesn't take, it's much cheaper than growing an opium of poppies in the field. And a, you know, any basic chemist can produce it. It's brought over in commercial trucks, almost impossible to stop. If it was to be done in the U.S., many of the chemicals have industrial uses. That's the problem. Why can't China just ban the export of chemicals? Because most of those chemicals are used in a variety of legal things. This is, unfortunately, probably the future of drug problems, is these chemically produced drugs, many of which are far more potent and dangerous, and the antidotes to overdose often don't work with them.
And now, as a listener just pointed out, there's even some more tweaking going on of the fentanyl to make even a more powerful drug. And that's a good point about antidotes. The antidotes, in many cases, this stuff is so powerful, it doesn't work.
Right.
And then trying to get people off this.
Well, despite my litany of despair, I'd say there is some good news.
Tell me.
Rising to 120,000, in 2023, 2024, 30% drop in deaths, had nothing to do with law enforcement. Had to do with, one, the most vulnerable users had died. Second, naloxone, the anti-overdose.
Is that
thing.
The Narcan?
Narcan became much more available. Third was the producers standardized doses because they didn't want to lose too many users. And the fourth was there are now a lot of ways to deal with addiction through medication.
Right.
And they became more available during the COVID years.
All right. Dr. Michael Schaller, always a pleasure. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Dr. Schaller from the University of Arizona, where he's a Regents Professor of History Emeritus. Our Monday one-on-one is presented by Mohs Gallery and Fine Framing. Their website is mohsgallery.com. They are located very conveniently, and I'll give them a free plug, Copenhagen, Fort Lowell and Dodge. And so check it out if you need any framing work done. And I've had a lot of framing done over at Mohs. They do a great job. We'll be right back.
Located in the heart of Arizona wine country, about an hour south of Metro Tucson, Flying Leap Estate Vineyards Winery and Distillery Facilities are one of the most beautiful wine venues in the southwestern United States. Come relax and unwind at our spacious property and learn about Arizona grape viticulture and winemaking from our team of trained sommeliers and discover the intricacies of the art of distillation. Learn more at flyingleapvineyards.com.
Family owned and run since 1985, Mohs Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Mohs Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at mohsgallery.com.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, and the green thing is Zocalo Village Studios. Our thanks to Dr. Michael Schaller, our Monday one-on-one very interesting conversation about the never-ending war on drugs that goes back well over 100 years and counting in this country. All right, Green Things and Zocalo Village, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. Everything you need for the garden and some beautiful furniture at Zocalo Village. They have a huge selection of pottery as well if you're looking for... Make some changes out on the patio. Arizona's largest selection of pottery at Green Things, greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. Those are the websites. Let's welcome now in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios, Jennifer Allen, Jen Allen, District 3 Democrat on the 5-member Pima County Board of Supervisors. Jen, how are you?
I'm hanging in there.
Yeah, busy as ever. Boy, this shutdown, this federal government shutdown is so frustrating. As you know, as of Saturday, about 40 million Americans who are on food stamps will lose their benefits. Those benefits will disappear. Can Pima County do anything to help these people? Or very limited support?
Yeah, you know, our budget was tight from the get-go of this fiscal year. We're a few months into it, but I think we're doing what we can. Mm-hmm. I think we are going to have there should be an item on our agenda to try to put forward some funding to help cover some gaps for infants who mm-hmm. are at the risk of losing formula.
Right.
That is just unacceptable.
Mm-hmm. Early childhood education also, at least 130 programs will be shut down as of this Saturday, the law. There's no real funding, federal funding for programs that people certainly have heard of. Everybody's heard of Head Start. All of that stuff's going away. This is huge.
And devastating, right? Mm-hmm. And it is... I think the thing that confounds me is sort of thinking about the ripple effects, the generational effects that it has, how much work has gone into setting up early childhood education programs mm-hmm. and how easy it apparently is to just pull the rug out from underneath that, but then to put those programs back into place and to rebuild. And then the impacts obviously that it has on children and families is just profound. It is a struggle to wrap my head around what we are experiencing.
And then the law, getting back to the food stamps, there is a law, Jen Allen, that the law requires billions of dollars in available emergency funds to be used during a shutdown. But the Republican-controlled legislature has chosen to ignore that law.
Ugh, yeah. Yep. And here we are.
How about talking a little bit about this recent event that I think you were one of the sponsors right up in Marana about a former detention facility that's now being eyed by ICE as a detention facility. What's that all about?
So there was a state prison mm-hmm. in Marana that was run by a private company, MTC, Management Training Corp, based out of Utah. That prison had low numbers, and so it was shut down.
Mm-hmm. Wasn't a moneymaker for them.
Uh-huh. No, and I think they just weren't, you know, as crime has been decreasing mm-hmm. and our prison numbers have also been decreasing. So it was shut down. It was sold back to the, it was sold to the state for about $150,000. If I think that number's correct.
Mm-hmm.
The state just sold it back to MTC for $15 million.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, we have heard from the Department of Homeland Security, from Secretary Noem, that she wants more detention beds, immigrant detention beds in the state of Arizona. There is Marana prison, former prison, has been on the list. There's actually only been two places that we've seen on the list, one being a Maricopa County jail as a place to increase beds, and then this Marana prison.
Mm-hmm.
MTC has been a little dodgy about whether or not indeed this is going to be an immigrant detention center, although they have said that to a few different media outlets as well as elected officials. But then in other places, they also deny it and say that they're in conversations with a lot of public agencies and trying to figure out what the best match is going to be. But given the big push for immigrant detention and given that the name has appeared on lists from DHS, it seems highly likely. And the fact that they purchased it for $15 million after just selling it for $150,000. I don't think you make that kind of expenditure on a whim or based on uncertainty.
The town of Marana, Pima County, and the state of Arizona, though, and the federal government apparently are not on the same page about this. They all seem to have a different vision for what this is going to be, what, you know, what this property is going to look like.
I mean, there's a lot of uncertainty, and I think that is one of our, should I say, our burdens to figure out. Is, you know, what is going to indeed happen? You know, we are monitoring whether or not if and when MTC has a contract, with DHS, and then still looking into where all the kind of levers or touch points are in opening the doors for an immigrant detention center.
Mm-hmm.
What are the decisions that a city, county, state, federal government need to make in order to get that up and off the ground so that as communities, we can weigh in. I mean, what we saw on Thursday when we had a meeting in Coyote Trails, Marana.
And there was a lot of interest, I guess, more than 250 people. Packed the place.
Yeah, we had over 300 on our full sign-in sheets that were collected.
Mm-hmm.
It was not just standing room only, but people standing outside the doors because we had exceeded the standing room.
Mm-hmm.
Lots and lots of concern.
Mm-hmm.
It was loud and clear. People don't want an immigrant detention center in Marana, and the ripple effects of a detention center in Marana throughout the county simply are just going to be spreading fear that we just simply don't need.
What recourse would Pima County have? What do you have any jurisdiction, or would that be very limited, if any?
It I think it'll be limited.
Because it is a private facility.
Privately run federal contract in the town of Marana. I think it is because it was previously a prison.
Mm-hmm.
My understanding is that it is currently zoned as a minimum security facility.
Mm-hmm.
Immigrant detention is often zoned as minimum security as well. So it may not go to the town of Marana for a zoning change. So they may not have many decisions at the town of Marana either. I'm trying to figure out what the process is for permission at the state level, as well as what additional steps there would be at the federal level.
What are you hearing from your constituents in District 3, not just about this facility, but roundups of anybody that seems to be in this country illegally?
People are outraged. People are afraid, and people want to see some, what's the word? Is that some stability, but also respect for the law?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have contemplated if we need to be promoting more kind of know your rights training so that people know what their constitutional rights are, that are contained within the Bill of Rights that apply to everyone. Whether you got one foot in this country,
yeah,
and
not
that's
just
it.
If you're a if you're driving down River Road and you've got rakes and stuff in the back of your pickup or whatever it is, and if maybe you look like you're Hispanic, are you going to be stopped?
Right. Because that's not probable cause. you know, but I think the thing that we are butting up against is that knowing your rights doesn't help you in this age of immigration enforcement, that there is not a respect for constitutional rights and for due process. And that's chilling.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely chilling. So then I think we see things like the massive protests, the No Kings March and rallies across the region here in Pima mm-hmm. County, but across the country.
Mm-hmm.
People are outraged mm-hmm. and they are concerned about what is happening to our country and trying to take it back and ensure that we don't keep going down farther and farther.
Do you think that will translate, that energy of the No Kings will translate into some of these races in 2026?
I do. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I have met
federal races. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. People are jumping in races to mm-hmm. run mm-hmm. in ways that I haven't seen. They're jumping in really early. So mm-hmm. I keep meeting candidates at events,
mm-hmm.
Running for local races. And these are races that are
so what you're saying,
a long distance out.
Energizing some folks.
Yeah, absolutely.
Jennifer Allen, Pima County Supervisor, District 3, will have another segment with Supervisor Allen after we take a quick break.
Vero Amore, where every certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore is located in the lovely Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell. Also, check out the full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
A proposed $2.6 billion regional transportation plan will be funded by a half-cent sales tax if Pima County voters approve the plan and tax next March for another 20 years. The tax rate will not increase. Funding from the 2006 voter-approved plan is expected to bring a $3.67 billion economic impact to the greater Tucson region. The sales tax investment for RTA Next will lead to a similar economic impact and more than 88,000 jobs over the next 20-plus years. Learn more about RTA Next funding and proposed projects at RTANext.com.
This is your captain speaking. Thank you for flying with Tucson International Airport, where you can avoid the hassles, long lines, and the expensive parking of the Phoenix Airport. Skip the traffic, breeze through security, and park with ease, all while supporting your community. Every flight from TUS brings more destinations and better connections right here to Tucson. So next time you're planning a getaway, remember, fly easy, fly local, fly TUS. This is your captain signing off. We're cleared for takeoff.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rieto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Welcome back. Jennifer Allen is here, Pima County Supervisor, Democrat District 3, and we've been talking about everything but Project Blue, which I want to talk about because, Jennifer Allen, it has not gone away. You and Andres Cano were the lone dissenters. The vote was 3-2. Do you think that, and many people do think that vote is going to come back, I don't know, to haunt. Maybe that's the right, maybe appropriate Halloween week. but it just, this Project Blue is not going away. And one of the reasons maybe it's not going away was that very important vote of 3-2.
It is like a, you know, plan on the Halloween week. It's like a zombie project that it, you know, reemerged what, you know, we'd hoped from the dead, of course, when the city voted not to annex. People are, this is going to, I think, have long-term impacts on people's, how they view us as the Board of Supervisors, without a doubt. And, we just had at our Board of Supervisors meeting on Tuesday, overflow. The board was so packed with people from the No Data Centers in the Desert coalition that the overflow, there was a time lag. In fact, you could hear people cheering and applauding with like a 20-second time lag from outside in the overflow. We just have not had this kind of engagement and community presence at our meetings before. And it is just, it is top of mind, as it should be, as it absolutely should be, right? One of my many concerns was that if we approved it, that it would open up the floodgates for data centers. Mm-hmm. And so now we are seeing, I think I read that Davis Monthan has put out an invite for proposals for data centers to be located on the base. Mm-hmm. We've got, there's been some
Marana.
News. Yeah, Marana, Sahuarita. Mm-hmm. Plus what will likely come to fruition on this 290 acres of what was Pima County land.
A listener just sent me an interesting message, and the question is, if Project Blue is going to use diesel generators until TAP can power them, these will surely violate the environmental air quality laws of Pima County that Pima County is responsible for. Will the county let that happen is the listener's question, Jennifer Allen.
I mean, I hope not. We shouldn't. We absolutely should not. I would love to see even greater muscle added to our environmental enforcement capacity through our Department of Environmental Quality so that we can curb air pollution from diesel generators by Project Blue, as we can for mine operations in the county, but just that we've got a whole lot more of enforcement strength. I know that
this would give Pima County a little bit of clout, perhaps, in saying whether or not we want data centers.
Yeah.
But again, it goes back to that 3-2 vote.
Exactly. I think there are things that I would love to see happen, but I am in the minority perspective on it. And so it is hard to move the ship from the minority seat, and make direction when we're in the minority.
And then Copper World, you guys have very little to say about that right now. Exactly.
Well, I think there we have,
environmental. Can you do anything in that area?
I hope so. Right now, a lot of the discussion is focused on the Arizona State Land Department lands, the state trust lands that Copper World is seeking to acquire. We are hoping that the state land department does not sell the land to Copper World. And I think we continue to look at air quality issues. The use of their land, use of lands, the air quality issues from trucks driving on those roads would have a tremendous impact on the region as a whole. So I think we are, as we have for years, long before I've been on the board for sure, been looking under every stone and trying to find some angles to slow down, if not stop, this mine from cutting up the Santa Rita Mountains.
You've been on the board, almost 2 years?
10 months.
Oh, my gosh.
It may feel like 2 years.
Wow.
But no, I just came in January.
Yeah. How's the first year? Yeah, I don't know. Time, sometimes I lose track.
It's a blur.
I mean, so how would you characterize the first year for you?
Ooh,
have you accomplished, you think, some of the things that you hoped for in the first year?
I mean, I did not anticipate a Trump administration.
Right.
So that has had a really big, I think, dampening effect on driving forward projects and initiatives that we really wanted to dig into. Mm-hmm. Someone because of the cuts in funding.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we are scrapping around for resources now to fill gaps that have been created by cuts in federal funding.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was not on any of the to-do list.
Mm-hmm.
No one said that that's what I should focus on when I was out knocking on doors, because we just didn't anticipate where we would be. But that said, I think
now it's sticking fingers in the dike.
Completely. Completely.
This issue is now...
Fingers and toes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think one of the things that I say I and my team, I have an amazing staff that helps ensure that we're doing what we need to do because our district is so big.
Mm-hmm.
We've set up office hours in 7 communities around the district because we have an office downtown Tucson up on the 11th floor, but it's not easy to get there from Ajo.
You try to go to these different service hours and
so we have regular office hours in Ajo, Pitcher Rocks, Marana.
I hope you have good tires.
I've just put new ones on.
It's a lot, isn't it?
It is a lot of miles.
Yeah, so you're in Ajo, you're trying to get there.
Yep, we're in Ajo. I'm there for office hours every other month, and then at least in between those months, then we have other meetings and things, but regular office hours every other month in all of the communities of the district.
And what are they saying to you, that law enforcement is at the top of their list, worrying about, what are their worries?
I mean, it varies. It varies. We've been spending a lot of time in Marana lately around some bigger projects. Obviously, the detention center is one that we've heard a lot about. There was a kind of proposed airstrip that had some contracts with military that had guys jumping out of planes and and head to toe military equipment with what looked like assault rifles landing in people's yards.
What? Heck?
Yeah. So we've a lot of local projects and things that we need to put our attention to. Lots of questions around zoning. And then the bigger stuff. I mean, Project Blue is something that we hear about from every corner of the district.
So that energy that was, you know, got going in June is still around against Project Blue and data centers.
Still around, absolutely. And
actually, steam, maybe.
It's at least from judging by how many people come to the Board of Supervisors meetings, it's growing.
Mm-hmm.
And now the interest is still in trying to stop that the county not close on the land sale contract. And there's also attention put now at the Arizona Corporation Commission because TEP has filed an energy agreement to enable Project Blue.
And I think Attorney General Mays is trying to look into that about TEP and their rate increase.
That is actually a different filing from TEP.
Okay.
They got two of them up there that are drawing a lot of community interest. One is that 14% rate hike, and then the other is the Project Blue Energy.
Okay, so if anybody listening wants services from District 3, what do? Just go to your website?
Yeah, they can shoot us a note at district3@pima.gov.
Okay.
And
you've got a very responsive staff.
We absolutely do. Yep. You'll get a note back from Claudia, probably, if you reach that District 3 email.
All right. Thank you, Jennifer Allen. Good to see you.
Thank you. Pleasure.
All right. On behalf of Supervisor Allen and John on the other side of the glass, engineering and producing the show, I'm Bill Buckmaster. Wishing everybody well. We'll be back with you tomorrow at 12:04.